Hey everyone, Graham Talks Pats, back again. Another episode, another Patriots win this week. It's becoming very standard, which has been, you know, obviously really nice to have this season. They had 8 wins in 23 and 24 combined, already up to 9 on the year through 11 weeks. The Mike Vrabel Coach of the Year train continues to you know, track really strong. And I think across the board, like, there's a lot of reason for that. And I think even on Thursday, it wasn't the, you know, the prettiest game, but I think it was the sort of game that was a very sort of Mike Vrabel game. It really had the makings of a midweek win, which is exactly what it was. My first game, I went to the game, my first Patriots game that I attended since 2023. 2023, Mac Jones leading that drive back of the end zone touchdown with, I think, 10 seconds left to Mike Gesicki to beat the Bills. So that was a super, super cool experience. And then obviously being able to see the Patriots beat the Jets this time around is super cool too. So we'll kind of just get right into the game, honestly. I mean, obviously divisional opponent is, you know, even though the Jets are a bad team, this had the makings of a game that didn't really surprise me as one that was a little bit closer than people expected. 27-14 was never really close, like, if you actually watch the game. On the scoreboard, winning by 13, still you're winning by 2 possessions. You look at the Jets, you say, hey, you're coming into the game on a 2-game win streak. Even though you aren't a team that, you know, made some crazy move or added some ridiculous player at the trade deadline, you were very active at the trade deadline, trading 2 stars in Sauce Gardner and Quinn Williams. It's kind of giving you a little bit of a boost, and now maybe you can continue this momentum, you know, getting a win over the Browns, who, for as bad as the Browns are, I do think they're a better team than the Jets, and mainly just because of that defense. I don't think the Jets defense is bad, but I don't think they don't have Myles Garrett. Justin Fields, not really to much surprise, continues to really struggle with his arm. Had under 100 passing yards, well under 100 passing yards going into the fourth quarter. Finished 15-26 with 116 yards, a passing touchdown, and then obviously a rushing touchdown. Also, to no surprise, Justin Fields looked really good on the ground. 11-67, good scrambler, had that touchdown and that read option. I think it was Harold Landry, if I remember correctly, actually reads that read option on the goal line well, but then, you know, or Justin Fields, I guess, reads Harold Landry wrong and still just has the speed to get to the edge. So I think it shows a lot about what he was able to do and how he's been in the league and been given so many opportunities for so long now. You know, his legs have been a big piece of that. So that's been great to see. You know, Breece Hall, second 50-plus yard running back. The Patriots have allowed this year. It was the week before, a couple days before, with Sean Tucker. Now Breece Hall. Breece Hall is a far better back, but definitely nice to see the Patriots still, for the most part, keep him 14-58, 4.1 carry. It's not a bad stat line for Breece Hall, but you know, you're going to want to see a lot more from him if you're the Jets, if you want a chance at winning this game, especially with Fields being your quarterback. Isaiah Davis didn't have much of a role, only 2 carries, but it was interesting. I actually thought on that first drive, he had 2 carries for 11 yards, and I actually thought he looked pretty good in those first 2 carries, and he didn't get the ball again, which I thought was interesting. The receiving situation for the Jets, obviously no Garrett Wilson. John Metchie led them with 3 catches for 45 yards and a touchdown. That touchdown, though, it was on a 4th down. Craig Woodson trips mid-play. So I don't give the Jets a ton of credit for that one. I do give them a lot of credit for that first drive. It was a longer drive. Took them a little while to get down there, but the first drive was legit from the Jets. But that second touchdown was it didn't look great. It wasn't easy on the eyes. Mason Taylor and Jeremy Ruckert each got involved, 4 catches each. Adonai Mitchell had 1 catch for 10 yards. For a guy, I don't know the exact number of targets. It looks like he had 6 targets, 1 catch on 6 targets. You know, he had a catch on that, I think it was on that first drive. But, I mean, just as in general, you got to be pretty disappointed if you're the Jets. You add this guy in the Sauce Gardner trade, given he's more of an afterthought in the trade, but you add him thinking, hey, like, you know, we've got a guy who was a second-round pick just a year ago. A lot of people thought he should have been a first-round pick into that first round. And he just... He beat Christian Gonzalez over the top once or twice, and he couldn't hold on. So I think that's got to be a little bit disappointing if you're a Jets fan. Obviously, wanting to see a little bit more into him. But you got some time to try to figure things out. I wasn't super familiar with Jarvis Brownlee's game, their nickelback. He got some more run with Sauce Gardner and Azari Thomas being out. He's a good player. He did have a little bit of a miscue with covering Pop Douglas. Douglas makes the grab, falls down. Brownlee sort of jumps over him, doesn't touch him on the ground, is kind of disappointed with himself. And then Pop Douglas just pops up and runs for another 10 yards. Since Brownlee didn't touch him. I think they've got something with him. Obviously made that move earlier in the year, moving a late round pick to Tennessee for him. So I think you've got something there with him. Moving on to why everyone's here with the Patriots. Drake May didn't light the stat sheet on fire like he has other times this year. He's still yet to throw for 300 yards, not just this year, but in his career. He went 25 for 34, 281 yards and a touchdown. The big thing was no turnovers. So, you know, it's not a ridiculous stat line. It's not one of these, you know, three touchdown efforts, but it's a maybe a little bit above modest game for May. High completion percentage, 75%, more or less. 107.6 rating, was only sacked once. Obviously had the touchdown pass to Trevion Henderson, who we'll get into in a second. But as a whole, you know, you got to be pretty satisfied with what May has brought to the table. He continues to make that MVP push, and you know, winning games like this, you know, doesn't necessarily that's not going to show on the end of season highlight reel where you're looking at and you say, "Wow, Drake May is something else. He's beating the Jets." But you know, these are the sort of games that you need to win if you want to be the MVP. Running the ball, Ramondre Stevenson obviously out again. Terrell Jennings out again. So. Or out, I should say. Trevion Henderson got almost the entire workload, 19 carries, only 62 yards on those 19 carries, 3.3 average, had two touchdowns, a long of just 9, and that's, I think, the long is pretty telling to me. If your longest rush is 9 yards, that means that's more of a, it's probably a better run defense. It's a defense that, you know, prioritizes not allowing these big plays. And Henderson is a big play guy. You saw it against Tampa. He has two long rushes. You take away those two long rushes, he goes 12 carries for 23 yards. This time, had the three touchdowns. The fantasy stat line looked great. But, you know, it wasn't a super efficient showing from him. So, yeah, I think if you're a fantasy manager and you have him on your team, you're jumping up and down. But I think, in actuality, you definitely do need another running back in there to, you know, be more of a consistent force. And Dearness Johnson, I think he's, as all things considered, not a terrible option as a practice squad caliber player, which is what he is for the Patriots. He's their fourth back. But he only had 3 carries for 6 yards. Drake May, 4 carries for 2. Pop Douglas lost 5 on an end around. So not a whole lot in the rushing game again. I like Henderson's efficiency by the goal line. But yeah, I think whether it's Ramondre Stevenson coming back for the rest of this year and, you know, getting involved because he hasn't fumbled lately, him getting a little bit more involved, finding ways to get, you know, these power formations, you know, utilize these power formations where you can kind of just run between the tackles and don't have to worry about Henderson's, you know, seemingly just inability to, you know, be consistent on the ground. You know, I do think you like that. And I do, we've talked about this a lot, but I do think adding another running back, whether it's through the draft, through free agency, through trade, come off season time is going to be something that they're going to look to do. And maybe they've found one in-house. Maybe Terrell Jennings, you get another offseason with him. Len Larrison, who is on IR, but, you know, was a pretty highly touted undrafted rookie out of UC Davis. You know, you've got these guys. Maybe you can work with them, develop them, and you feel better about what they can bring to the table. So it'll definitely be interesting to see what the coming months bring for the running back position. Receiving, it was more of the same. Stephon Diggs remains that high volume guy. A lot of catches for him, 9 for 105 on 11 targets. So he, it seems, is going to be this like kind of a slot guy who isn't going to be like the Pop Douglas of the world where they're ridiculously shifty and all these other things, but he's going to be really sure-handed. He's going to get you the first downs. He's going to be the sort of safety net for Drake May, which is something that I think is really key to have for any quarterback, especially a young quarterback with May only being in his second year. Matt Collins continues to be a really, really solid deep threat in Kayshon Boutte's absence. 4 catches, 64 yards. You know, just across the board, he's looked really, really good. For a guy who doesn't have traditional elite speed going downfield, this isn't a Tyquan Thornton or a Jalin Hyatt, given both of those guys, neither of those guys that I just mentioned are good. But Tyquan's having a little bit of a career resurgence, but neither of those players are good players, but they have great time speed, right? Matt Collins, I don't know what his 40 time was, I'd be curious, but I can't imagine he has ridiculous time speed. Matt Collins' 40 time, 4.53. That's very similar to like a Kendrick Bourne, Kayshon Boutte, where it's like, yeah, they've got capable speed, but it's not elite. And he just continuously finds ways to take the top off the defense. So you got to really like it, like what Matt Collins has brought to the table. He had a play earlier in the game in the first half where he got by the safety, and the guy at the corner, I think it was Jarvis Brownlee, made a really, really nice play on the ball to break it up at the last second. But it looked like that was going to be like a 40-yard bomb to get the Patriots inside the 5, inside the 10. So I think you really like what Matt Collins has brought so far. Hunter Henry, 4 for 45. I think his importance kind of rose a little bit, even with Stephon Diggs being a really nice intermediate threat, Matt Collins being your deep guy. Having Hunter Henry being a having him be like a capable guy has been really nice to have this season. Austin Hooper was out for this past game with a concussion. Obviously, Kayshon Boutte's been out for the last two games, so that takes that sort of deep threat downfield out of the game. And it is interesting. I was kind of curious to see how they would handle the tight end situation, right? Because they opted not to elevate a tight end from the practice squad. Instead, said, Hunter Henry, you're a guy. You're our only tight end by, you know, ESPN standards that's on the roster. You've got Jack Westover. Jack Westover can play some fullback and definitely can play some tight end. That's where he played in college, and they've kind of tried to force him into that fullback role. We'll talk about him in a second. Using Kyrus Tonga as a fullback and putting Jack Westover more in line. You got the opportunity to move Matt Collins into sort of an inline receiver role just because of how big he is. So Matt Collins, I'm a huge fan of his. I think that's one of the more underrated free agency signings, not just for the Patriots, but for the league. I think he's been really, really good, especially the last couple of games. So that's been great to see. Pop Douglas, we talked about him for a second earlier with the catch on Jarvis Brownlee where he gets up and runs for another 10. That was a 26-yard gain. Other than that, 2 catches for 10 yards, another 5-yard loss in the run game. Not a whole lot to talk about with Pop. I do like what he brings as a fourth, fifth option. Not just a receiver, but if you include tight ends, running backs. Like, I think if you say, hey, we've got Diggs, we've got Matt Collins, we've got Kayshon Boutte, and Pop's our fourth guy, I do like that. I think by the time you get to next year, you need to be looking at, hey, Kyle Williams needs to be ahead of Pop Douglas. You need to find out, you know, can you add another guy on top of, you know, Kayshon Boutte, Matt Collins from the outside that looks good enough to jump into that receiver four role. And then all of a sudden you're in a great spot where you're saying, Pop Douglas, you're kind of a gadget guy, specific plays, etc. Because I don't think he's a full-time starter, but I like what he brings as a, you know, as a spark plug to the offense a little bit. Kyle Williams held without a catch on 3 targets. Got deep on an early play, and I think May kind of either undershot him or Kyle Williams needed to keep running, and it just wasn't a great ball. Either way, May threw it into double coverage, and I didn't like that much. Trevion Henderson, 5 catches for 31 yards, obviously had the touchdown in the back of the end zone, leaks out and finds a hole between the linebackers and safeties, his first career receiving touchdown, so that was great to see. Jack Westover has 0 catches this year. Both times he's been targeted, it almost looks like he's volleyball setting the ball up for defensive backs, which is not a great look for him, especially given that Kyrus Tonga is taking his role as a fullback. And if you want to say, if you're the defense and you say, hey, Jack Westover's out there, he can't catch the ball anyway, you know, why put any focus on him? Because I think that's the idea behind not putting Kyrus Tonga out there for, you know, as your full-time fullback, is because he takes away any ambiguity of, hey, are they going to pass the ball to this guy? Given that might be setting him up to, you know, have a play action where he rolls into the flat and he comes wide open. But you got to wonder if you're, you know, Mike Vrabel, how much longer Jack Westover is going to be on the team. In particular, because yesterday, or 2 days ago now, they signed CJ Dupree, undrafted rookie out of Alabama, who was on the practice squad, to the active roster. And I mentioned on my Twitter, Graham Wilker 1, for anyone interested in following. I had mentioned, talking about Dupree, I've got a couple tweets on him. I mentioned on November 11th before the Jets game, talking about two practice squad names to watch, CJ Dupree, 23 out of Alabama, and Thomas Odukoya, 28 out of Eastern Michigan. Dupree, more college success. Odukoya, really good athlete, could be a good addition as a blocker. They ended up not elevating either of them, but then obviously felt better about Dupree as an addition to the full-time roster for the rest of this year. So my tweet says, Dupree was signed with the practice squad yesterday. His 32 reps of 225 at the 2025 Combine was tied for second most of all players. The next best tight end total was 22 from Elijah Arroyo. Robbie Utes, who is a fullback for the Seahawks, was listed as a tight end. He is not a tight end. He had like 26 or something like that. It was somewhere between Arroyo and Dupree. 32 is also the most by an Alabama player since 2000, which I thought was, you know, notable. I have another tweet that talks about him saying, interesting piece from new signing CJ Dupree. I talked about how with Jack Westover getting his role taken by Kyrus Tonga, and if you think that CJ Dupree has more potential as an inline tight end, especially with, as of Tuesday, yesterday, Austin Hooper still being questionable with that concussion, if you think CJ Dupree has more potential as an inline tight end, then, you know, you probably do opt for him over Westover. And you're going to keep Westover on the roster for the time being. But when Milton Williams comes back, I would not be shocked if, especially if Dupree performs, if you say, hey, we're gonna part ways with Jack Westover. We're going to send him back to the practice squad and see if he can keep developing that run blocking. Dupree had a 64.8 run blocking grade last year at Alabama. So I wouldn't be shocked if you see him get some snaps. I think that could be interesting. So yeah, I think it's probably only a matter of time until CJ Dupree is probably jumping Jack Westover for that role, as sort of that tight end 3 when everyone's healthy, tight end 2 probably for now. You know, I think you really like the physical tools. You like the Alabama acumen. He's 6'5", 256, 225 pounds, 32 reps of 225, I should say, at the combine. So obviously very, very strong. Yeah, I think you like the physical tools that are there, and for an undrafted rookie, I think he's got the athleticism you're looking for. So he'll be a name that's, you know, a little bit more under the radar, but a guy that you might see on the field on Sunday when they play the Bengals. That'll be interesting to watch. Defensively for the Patriots this past week, you know, it wasn't like ridiculous. They're playing the Jets. The Jets have one of the worst offenses in football. But Jack Gibbons continues to be pretty impressive as a linebacker next to Rappers Blaine in Christian Ellis' absence. Christian Ellis dealing with an injury also. Jalen Hawkins, Craig Woodson in the defensive backfield were solid. Bell Pettis had a nice breakup on 4th and 3. He continues to, you know, carve out a mini role for himself as a special teamer and as a safety. Yeah, Craig Woodson, we mentioned the little bit of a trip he had, eventually ended up, you know, giving up that touchdown to John Metchie. We're going to talk about Milton Williams too. So, Milton Williams, high ankle sprain, was placed on IR. It's not season ending, but he's probably going to be out for the next 4 to 6 weeks. You look at how you can make up for his absence, for one, you're paying a defensive tackle $92 million, not named Milton Williams, and that's Christian Barmore. You're going to need him to step up. He had a sack last game, so I think you'd like that. But, you know, you're going to want to continue to see him playing at a level where you can justify that $92 million deal. And he hasn't done anything to justify it, really, but he also hasn't done anything to not justify it. He's been hurt, so we haven't seen him on the field a ton, especially not last year. I'm curious to see what PFF thinks of him. PFF, a bit biased as a site, but, you know, I think it gives you something of an idea. Yeah, 69.9 pass rush grade is solid. He's played 417 snaps. He ranks 6th in the NFL in pressures, which is great to see. So, yeah, I think you like what he's been able to do. The only thing that I would question is how much of that is because defenses are focused on Milton Williams, who's having a really good year for the team. Yeah, I think you're going to be looking at Christian Barmore primarily as one of those guys who really needs to step up. You've got some other options, though, right? Corey Durden, a guy that you signed from the Giants, who's been a nice depth option. You know, you've got Eric Gregory, who didn't play at all this year, steps in, plays 15 snaps against the Jets. As a guy who was at the game, it seemed like every other play, every run play that was a run stuff at the line of scrimmage, they were zooming in on Eric Gregory. What number was he? He was 55, I think. Yeah, 55. I was trying to see if I could guess. Yeah, it seemed like every play they were zooming in on 55, the big D tackle. So I thought he looked really good. He's an undrafted rookie out of Arkansas. He's 25 years old, 320 pounds. So you definitely have something with him, I think, as a, you know, a guy that you can rotate in for a couple snaps a game as a defensive tackle if push comes to shove. Kyrus Tonga, obviously, you're going to be looking at him to help stop the run. You've got pretty good run-stopping defensive ends in Caleb Von Chason and Harold Landry. Anthony Chennings obviously working in there too. Chason and Landry have also been nice pass rushers, so I think you like what you see there. Elijah Ponder, his second consecutive game with a sack. I think you like that a lot. So yeah, I think there's a lot of you know, things to like that you see out of this group. So yeah, you know, 14 points against the Jets. One was on an opening drive, which it seems like they just can't stop giving up opening drive touchdowns. The other, a little bit of a fluky play with Craig Woodson falling down. He's looked really good this year at safety for them. So, you know, that shouldn't be any source of discouragement for him. Darius Harris was a practice squad elevation. He played mostly special teams. He was placed on practice squad IR this week. And they actually made a new signing to the practice squad, Otis Reese. Started his college career at Georgia. Ended up at Ole Miss. He's 27 years old. Spent some time with Vrabel in Tennessee. Hasn't really done anything in the NFL, but I think at this point, you know, Darius Harris on season-ending IR from that practice squad spot. Harris is 29 years old, so he, you know, you kind of know what you have with him already. But Otis Reese, who's 27, he's got an extra year or two. You know, maybe you can develop him into a strong special teamer. We'll have to see. But that'll be something to look out for. Yeah, I mean, I think you look at this defense as a whole and you feel pretty good about what they've been able to put together. Yeah, and, you know, this upcoming week, we're going to talk about that in a moment, but you've got a really tough offense to play. So an offense that's had a lot of success, and that's the only reason they're winning any games, and as for as few games as the Bengals do win. But all in all, you know, 27-14, it's hard to hate on a team that wins. Definitely some things to clean up, but a lot of those can be attributed to midweek action. Now, this next week, you have the opportunity to get to double-digit wins for the first time since Mac Jones leading the squad. Yeah, I mean, you look at what the Bengals have. Joe Flacco, a little bit up and down as a QB. He actually threw an pick six. I shouldn't even just say interception. It was a pick six to Kyle Duggar last week. So for any Patriots fans who might have been watching Red Zone, that tells you something. It seemed like, just of course, why can't we get guys like that sort of thing? I mean, you look at the depth chart as a whole, you know, Joe Flacco's, you know, he's better than Jake Browning. He's better than Sean Clifford. He's not a lot, though. He's not great. Chase Brown is a solid back. He hasn't hit 100 yards in a game in a month. Hit 99 pretty recently. Samaje Perine's doubtful. He's had kind of an up and down. I shouldn't even really say up and down. He hasn't done a ton this year. Averages 6.2 a carry, which is nice, but that's in large part carried by a 90-yard game he had against the Jets, actually. 9 for 94 and a touchdown, 10 a carry. But he's, you know, for a guy who doesn't do a ton, he had one carry last week against the Bears, or 2 weeks ago against the Bears. You know, there's not a ton of consistency there. I think you like what he's offered in the past as a receiver out of the backfield, but still only 7 catches this year. It seems like Chase Brown has really, you know, taken control of that running back room, as they should, because Brown is a better player. I'd be curious. I'm actually not sure what his final stats looked like last year. Yeah, so Brown had 990 yards, 7 touchdowns, 4.3 a carry, another 360 yards through the air. So I do think you like what Chase Brown gives you. Yeah, I think, you know, you like what he offers. But Perine being out doesn't benefit them at all. Taj Brooks, Texas Tech, 6th round pick, only 7 carries in the year. Definitely more of a power guy, 220 pounds, just 5'9". He's got a very similar build to Ray Davis. The story of the week for the Bengals was Jamar Chase's suspension. Spat on Jalen Ramsey. Suspended for a game. So the Bengals are going to be relying on players that aren't, you know, the most experienced stepping up. Sure, you've got T. Higgins, right, who's, you know, one of the top receivers in the league, probably the best receiver, too, in the league. You know, you can have that debate between Higgins, I think actually right now probably George Pickens with the way he's been playing, Devontae Smith, but definitely up there, Puka Nacua. There's actually better wide receiver twos than I would have thought on first thought. But still, T. Higgins, one of those top receivers in the NFL. Andre Yoshivas, good athlete, doesn't really provide you a ton, though. Mitchell Tinsley was a preseason standout. Charlie Jones, their punt returner. Jermaine Burton has really done nothing in his NFL career for a guy that was, you know, pretty highly touted coming out of Bama, 3rd-round pick. I think that's probably been disappointing to see from them. Only 4 catches on 14 targets last year. Had some trouble with character. So, yeah, I think that's got to be pretty disappointing if you're the Bengals. But with Jamar Chase out, this is the sort of time when you'd expect guys like that to step up. Noah Fant, their tight end. He's not terrible. Former first-round pick. He, you know, is going to be that safety blanket for Flacco. Has some speed, so you can run him on the seam. So there's definitely a role for him there. Drew Sample, former 2nd-round pick out of Washington. Mainly a blocker at this point. It's kind of what he's been in his career, which I don't think is what they were hoping for when he first came out of college. His best year came in 2020, 349 yards off 40 catches. From 2021 on, he's never eclipsed more than 163 yards. Never more than 22 catches either, 105 catches in 7 years. So, Sample's not much of a receiving threat, good blocker, though. You look at the Tanner Hudson, another good blocker. The offensive line isn't awesome. Ted Karras, a former Patriot at center. Marius Mims, a former first-round pick, but not a guy who's been spectacular at right tackle. Orlando Brown is not what he once was. Dylan Fairchild's a pretty solid left guard, has been a good rookie. Dalton Reisner, was signed a little bit later in the process. Looks like he got benched for Jalen Rivers, who was a 5th-round pick this past draft out of the University of Miami. So Lucas Patrick in there, too. Lucas Patrick, a former Bear. He's been around the block a little bit. Cody Ford as well, former Bill. So you've got some guys here who have some experience, who have some experience on the offensive line. Still not a great unit, though, as a whole. Defensively, this team is really poor. Doesn't help that 2 of your best players are doubtful. Cam Taylor-Britt, Trey Hendrickson. This defense, they've actually invested quite a bit. You look at this. Cam Taylor-Britt won't play. Bengals coach Zach Taylor said on Monday that Taylor-Britt's foot is expected to require surgery for a Lisfranc injury suffered during the team's loss to Pittsburgh on Sunday. He will not be playing. And he's doubtful to play Sunday against the Patriots as Trey Hendrickson because of a hip injury. So this, to me, you're losing three of your best players. Shamar Stewart's on IR. I mean, like, just across the board, this has been a really – it's a defense that isn't that good in the first place. You traded Logan Wilson a couple weeks ago, but they've just been decimated by injuries too. Dax Hill's playing the nickel, former first-round pick. Jordan Battle is a solid – option at safety. Geno Stone led the NFL in interceptions a couple years ago. DJ Turner has ridiculous speed. Oren Burks is a solid journeyman linebacker. Barrett Carter and Demetrius Knight. Demetrius Knight was a second round pick, but Barrett Carter, is a little bit underwhelming as a linebacker. Joe Giles Harris is their backup middle linebacker. He was like a special teams player on the Patriots during preseason, I think a year or two ago. Miles Murphy is a rotational piece for them at this point, another former first-round pick. So you've actually invested quite a bit into this defense. It just hasn't, panned out as you might have hoped. T.J. Slayton, a former Florida nose tackle, he was with Green Bay for a little while. I'd be curious to see how much money he got. T.J. Slayton contract. He would have been a free agency signing. He signed a 2-year, $14 million deal. So, look, I think you have some pretty reasonable investment into this team. It just hasn't worked out the way you would hope. So I think it's pretty frustrating if you are, a Bengals fan just watching this team put up however many points and you keep allowing ridiculous numbers of points. So, just week in, week out, you're allowing 47 of the Bears. You're scoring 42 on your end offensively with Joe Flacco at the helm, feeling great. And your defense is allowing 47. It's just, it's laughable, quite honestly. Joseph Asai is a veteran at this point from Texas. It's just a pretty whatever defensive front. BJ Hill's fine. And I think a lot of these players, if you knock them down a peg in the defensive depth chart, you would look at it and say, this isn't terrible. But with Trey Hendrickson out and Cam Taylor-Britt out, it's not a good look. You're going to be looking at Josh Newton, the former TCU man, to be stepping in. Marco Wilson, former Patriot who got cut in the middle of last year because he wasn't better than Alex Austin, the Patriots' fourth corner. It's really just not a great group of players. I think there's not much hope to me if you're Cincinnati. You're looking at it and you say, hey, the way we win games is by putting up an absurd number of points, right? And I just don't know if they're going to be able to do it this week. Obviously, you don't have Joe Burrow, but you haven't had Joe Burrow when you're putting up these ridiculous point figures. Jamar Chase out. The Patriots are so good against the run, I wouldn't expect Chase Brown to do much. So if you're able to bottle up Chase Brown, force Joe Flacco to throw the ball a ridiculous amount, but then be without Jamar Chase, be without Mike Gesicki, an offensive line that's historically been really suspect, I don't think you look at that and you say, I think if Andre Yoshivas or Mitchell Tinsley or Noah Fant beats you, so much so that you lose the game, I think you can live with that. It's really just going to be, hey, Christian Gonzalez, lock up T. Higgins for us, stay solid against the run, and you're going to be in a good spot. Defensively, or offensively, I should say, with this Bengals defense, I think the only way you can hurt yourself is by doing exactly that, by hurting yourself. I don't think the Bengals defense is going to hurt you. This is not a defense that's going to force turnovers. If you're throwing the ball right to the defensive backs, they'll pick it off just like any other player in the NFL. But I don't think you're looking at it and saying, hey, they've got, Josh Newton, DJ Turner, and Dax Hill as their trio of corners. Marco Wilson's kind of working in too. Like, oh no, that's a pretty weak corner group. And like I mentioned, you've got Demetrius Knight, who I think, out of South Carolina is a high you know, potential player. Oren Burks is you know, made a, you know, he's found a career for himself as a rotational linebacker, as a good run stopper. TJ Slayton's good against the run. I just think when you look at it very holistically, you know, zoom out, look at what this team can bring, and it just isn't inspiring. And I honestly mentioned this a second ago. If you just go over what they've invested into this team, right? Going just position by position, right? Shamar Stewart was a first round pick. You then decided you weren't going to give him a contract and, you know, have a whole, you know, standoff with him until he finally joins the team. Was this only Quinshon Judkins, who had battery charges, signed later than him. He was the second to last rookie signed. He was your first round pick. Joseph Asai in 2021, you take in the third round, a little bit longer ago, but still a guy that you're hoping at this point would be a better player than he is. Not a bad player, but I think you were probably hoping for a little bit more. And then on the defensive line, you're looking at it, right? TJ Slayton, you invest in 7 a year. You traded for BJ Hill a couple of years back. You send Billy Price to the Giants, who was a first-round pick, a center out of Ohio State. You take Chris Jenkins last year in the second round at 49 overall. You take Demetrius Knight in the second round. You take Barrett Carter in the fourth round this year. You sign Oren Burks to be that strong side linebacker. Miles Murphy, first-round pick. Trey Hendrickson, you invest a big deal in. He gets hurt. DJ Turner, second-round pick. Geno Stone, you give a contract to. Cam Taylor-Britt, second-round pick. Dax Hill, first-round pick. You just go through the team, and it's just like, it's a lot of these guys. Was Jordan Battle, I think, was a little bit later. Jordan Battle was still a third-round pick. I thought he was a fourth or fifth for whatever reason. You've invested quite a bit in this roster, and for whatever reason, you just consistently defensively are missing the mark. And I don't know enough about the Bengals' inner workings to know if this is like, it's a personnel issue, because I do know a lot of the players on this team, and given I don't think the personnel is very good, but I can't imagine it's so poor that there's not something to do with coaching going on there too, because they clearly, whether it's the recognition of talent or the development of talent, just can't do it very well. Dax Hill was a player I really liked coming out of college. It's a guy that a lot of people thought the Patriots could have grabbed as like a safety, as a nickel corner, and he's playing in the nickel, playing in the slot as a pro for the Bengals. You don't love what you see if you're the Patriots, or if you're the Bengals. Like I mentioned, as far as former Patriots go, as far as storylines go, Ted Karras is one of those guys. Looking at the rest of this team, Jo'Jaws Harris, we had mentioned, Marco Wilson. So I think as far as the roster goes, it begins and ends with those three. For the Patriots, or former Bengals on the Patriots, I should say, I'm looking through right now. I'm not entirely sure. I don't think anyone on offense played for the Bengals. Carlton Davis did not. Marcus Jones did not. It looks like there's no storylines as far as former players going either on the Patriots who used to play for the Bengals. You've got a group of guys who on the Patriots who are far superior to what the Bengals have brought to the table. As far as, really quick, just to touch on this too, as far as injuries go, Ramondre Stevenson seems like he'll be back this week. You've got a little bit of more time. Kayshon Boutte, I haven't heard anything about in the last day or two. Kayshon Boutte is expected to take part in practice today on Wednesday. Christian Ellis, I'd imagine, is probably coming back. He remains questionable. You look at the guys who have been kind of replacing them, and I think you're pretty satisfied with Jack Gibbons. You're pretty satisfied with Trevion Henderson. I was just checking this. I'm curious. Just looking at guys that like really need to step up in the next couple of weeks. You got to think, you know, you look at it, you say Ramondre Stevenson over these next couple of weeks, just in order to make this playoff push. Because I think this game will be, this Bengals game will be over pretty quick. you look at it and you just say, you know, you need your $92 million defensive tackle to step up in Milton Williams' absence. And he had a sack last game, so we're in a good spot. Carlton Davis, just, we keep talking about him every week. He gives up so many key plays, but you're gonna really need him to step up, especially for Christian Gonzalez. God forbid he were to go down. You know, you're gonna need him to be in a better spot. Yeah, I think those are like the three main guys that you look at and you say, we really need you to step up and be, you know, great for us if we want to put ourselves in that elite tier of players. So I think that's where you are with that. As far as a prediction goes for the game, I wrote about this in the Daily Campus article that I wrote this week. It should be coming out today, or probably already did come out. I haven't checked, actually. Yeah, you look at it, you say the Bengals are already weak defensively. They're probably going to be without Travion Henderson. They're probably going to be without Cam Taylor-Britt. Then you're probably saying, hey, like, the Patriots aren't going to have much trouble putting up points. It just feels like another game where, kind of similar to the Titans game, kind of similar to the Browns game, where it might not be 40 that gets put on the board, just because I think in order to put up 40, there needs to be defensive scores, things along those lines. But I could see them running the ball a lot. Cincinnati is the worst run defense in football. Travion Henderson's coming off having 5 touchdowns in 5 days, even though in that second game he wasn't the most efficient on the ground. So, yeah, to me, I think, you know, it might not be a 40-point win, but it's like 40-point 40 points on the board for you. But I do think there's a real possibility that you look at it and you say, hey, you know, Patriots put up 35, they put up 38, they put up 33, somewhere in that range, that mid to high, or really low to mid-30s, I think is appropriate. I'm going to say the Patriots put up 35, the Bengals. I do think they're a good enough team to score. I don't think that the Patriots need to shake this first drive jitters thing out defensively, because it seems like they allow a touchdown on the first drive like every single week. I'd be curious. I don't remember it exactly, but I'd love to. One thing I might do on my Twitter at GrahamWilker1 is the at there, is just see how many first drive touchdowns the Patriots have allowed, because it seems like this is just a weekly occurrence. So I would expect the Bengals to score there, as they probably will, and as the Patriots have allowed them to do, have allowed other teams to do over the past couple weeks. And they probably do score again at some point. I feel pretty confident saying, you know, 35-14, maybe 31-10, somewhere in that range. And the Patriots won't have much trouble getting into the end zone. This is a game for Drake May to hopefully pad his stats a little bit. Should be a game where Travion Henderson and maybe Ramondre Stevenson, if he's back, can get back and you know, hopefully build some momentum going into the next couple weeks, where you're going to have the Giants after this, but then you're going to have a bye. You're going to have the Bills. You're going to have the Ravens. You're going to have the Dolphins, who are never an easy team for the Patriots to play, despite, you know, them not being a great team this year. It took the Patriots 33 points to beat them by one possession. Dolphins probably should have won that game in Miami all the way back in week 2. And then obviously there's a history of the Dolphins beating the Patriots at the end of the year, whether it's Ryan Fitzpatrick throwing a Gesicki at the back of the end zone, costing them that first round bye all those years ago, back in, I think, 2019, or a couple years ago, Mac Jones's rookie year. Looks like the Patriots are going to hit 11 wins and secure the 5th seed instead. They slip down to the 6th seed, if I'm not mistaken. And, So, I think across the board, you know, the Jets too. So, really, you've got 3 games that are pretty difficult. You're going to have the Bills. You're going to have the Ravens. You're going to have Miami, who, even though they're not great on paper, always gives you issues like I was just talking about. Then you're going to have the Jets. You're going to have the Giants. And you're going to have this Bengals game. So, I do think the Patriots win 12 games this year, which is crazy to say. But they're hot right now. And hopefully this mini buy didn't, you know, take their eyes off the prize at all. But yeah, I think, you know, across the board, the team looks good. You're going to be hoping that Milton Williams can be back sooner rather than later. Obviously, you know, want him to heal up from that high ankle sprain. Patriots have a great shot to move to 10-2. I won't have a pod next week leading up to the game against the Giants. So anyone who wants to, you know, follow my Twitter, anything like that, Graham Walker won, like I said a couple times here. I'll probably live tweet that game maybe. You know, definitely, even if I don't, I'll have plenty of info on that for you guys. It's obviously, it's fun to do, fun to dig up these random little stats. So, yeah, it's been another fun 45 minutes or so chatting Patriots. And, yeah, hopefully they can move to 10-2 this weekend. It's when Graham talks Pats.